In 1 Thessalonians 1 and verse 8, "For the word of the Lord has sounded forth from you." The church in Thessalonica did its best to spread the word of the Lord, and that is an example that we are trying to copy. There are some things that we have done recently. There have been Bibles and songbooks sent to Mexico, and in a couple of months, there will be a visit made to Mexico, Lord willing. Several times in the past year, at least twice, let me put it that way, at least twice, we have purchased Bibles in African dialects. And Africa is one of those places where, believe it or not, just getting your hands on a Bible is a challenge. $10 a copy. You think, wow, that sounds kind of expensive for Africa. Well, when you were dealing in the Kinandi dialect and the Kinyanwanda dialect, and it has to be translated as it is ordered, suddenly you've got a little bit of a problem. But this is something that we have been endeavoring to do, trying to help furnish Bibles for brethren who are in Africa who do not have a copy in the language that they speak. You've also been hearing quite a bit about a collection from individuals that we're going to split between Africa and the Philippines. As of last week, there had been $2,977 contributed by individuals. $1,487 has been sent to John Schultz along with money from the treasury and also some money for expenses for travel. Now, there is a problem, and I will tell you the nature of the problem. If you've been watching the news, you might be aware of what the problem is. In Zimbabwe, there has been a total blackout of news. The government has shut down the internet. They've shut down the phones. They've shut down pretty much everything. No news gets out. The basic reason for this is gasoline went to $14 a gallon. Vegetables went to $16 a pound. A liter of cooking oil is $16. And this is for people who don't have any money to begin with, and whose currency has just crashed. So if you don't have South African rand or American dollars, you can't buy anything in Zimbabwe to begin with. When people started demonstrating, the response of the military government was to shoot them down in the street. So at the moment, we have a government shooting people. We have a situation where you can't drive around because you can't buy gasoline. And the brethren in Zimbabwe told John, "Don't come, you won't make it." So the trip is canceled momentarily. What he intends to do is to find four or five brethren, such as the Apostle Paul on the trip to Jerusalem, brethren who can be trusted, brethren who will watch each other, possibly meet him at the border to see what can be done. If nothing can be done, he'll just sit and wait until something can be done. And he has asked for us to remember to pray for the church in Zimbabwe. There are a lot of brethren there, and when you talk about a government shooting people and no food to be had and no money to buy it with, if it was to be had, thieves on the road everywhere you turn, you know, it really does look like some of our brethren are going to die. That's the way it looks. It's not a religious persecution. It's just economic and political collapse. But that being said, it doesn't change the fact that it looks very, very bad for some of our brethren in Zimbabwe. Now, we said we collected $2,977, half sent to John. The other half goes to the Philippines. And in actuality, about $1,500 had been collected. That was as of last week. At the moment, the number for the Philippines is up to $2,200. Now, the Philippines is not a brand new thing for us. This is trip number 6. Every 2 years, except this time it was 3 years, every 2 years a trip has been made to the Philippines to look at the situation that exists there. And the purpose of the trip is threefold. Number one, we want to maintain contact with those that we are supporting. We want to know the men to whom we send funds. We also want to teach. And there will be plenty of opportunity for that. Filipino audiences are very good audiences. They sit, they listen. And we also want to see to the needs of the brethren. As Jesus said, the poor you always have with you. And oftentimes when we talk about a privileged situation in America, sometimes we don't see that the poor you always have with you. But if you look around the world, you see brethren and you realize that is true. The poor you always have with you, and whenever you will, you can do them good. Now, for a moment, I'd like to show some old pictures. These are pictures you've seen before, and this is simply just to refresh our memories. What we're trying to do now is to stick a face with a place. And the first place I want to think about is Luzon, the northernmost island in the Philippines. In Luzon, we're supporting Ray Granetta and Victor Ramos. Now, these pictures, I took them. So you know you're going to have problems right off the bat. These are the best ones I could find, but this is Ray and Victor. Now, we'll be seeing Ray and Victor on Luzon during the course of the trip. Yes. Oh. The big guy on the left is Ray. The thinner guy on the right is Victor. And they are related. They're brother-in-laws, by the way. Nice guys. They have a good reputation among their brethren. Every time we made the trip to the Philippines, we found a way to see Ray and Victor. Now, Ray and Victor, that's Luzon. Come down here to Negros. That's the island right in the center of that dot right there. We are going to Oriental Negros, which is the southern part of that island. And on that island, it's Gerson Labid, Pablo Quibada, Marian Morados, and that's Marian's daughter, and also his father, William. Couldn't find a really good picture of William, so I didn't put it up there. These are the four men that we are supporting on Negros. And then there is Mindanao, the southernmost island. You see the term Moro Gulf? If you look at the first O in Moro, then come straight up from that O and see that little spit of land jutting out there, that little peninsula, that's the spot. On that particular place, we are supporting Olimpio Sandalon. We also supported Ernesto Canon at one time, but then the situation came about that he didn't really need our support anymore, so we stopped supporting him. His need has kind of grown a little since then, but these are guys that we know very well. Now, after Mindanao, the last place we point out is the island of Cebu, and hopefully you can see it there. That's kind of a vacation island in the Philippines. And on Cebu, we support Roland Henaralao. Now, if you can, kind of remember the faces and the names a little bit. I know you're not going to totally memorize everything, but kind of get it in your mind a little. I mean, this is north to south. If you wonder what kind of men they are, they look like they're country guys, except for maybe Roland. Roland's kind of an office worker, works in a city. But I guarantee you the rest of them are just plain old country guys. And actually, they're getting a little bit older, too. We've been supporting some of them for quite a while now. They are the type of men who will just continue to preach. They are plotters. And when I say plotters, I don't mean that in a bad way. What I mean by plotters is that they will hang in and they will preach and they will preach and they will preach and they will preach. They all have problems. If we backed up a little bit, Ernesto, his wife is very sick. Olympio, his son died of a heart attack while driving down the road. So things have happened to all of these men. All of them have problems, and all of them can use encouragement. In 2 Corinthians 7 and verse 6, "But God, who comforts the depressed, comforted us by the coming of Titus, and not only by his coming, but also by the comfort with which he was comforted in you, as he reported to us your longing, your mourning, your zeal for me, so that I rejoiced even more." There were times when even the Apostle Paul needed some comfort. And there are times when men such as these also need to be comforted. Now, I'm not Titus. But sometimes just a visit from somebody to communicate the idea that we really do care what happens to you is the kind of thing that men need to hear. Now, here is the travel plan. On January 29th, I will pick up Randy and Judy Hilburn and drive down to LAX. And at LAX, we'll meet Tommy Denson. He went with us 3 years ago, so it'll be Randy and Judy and myself and Tommy Denson. We'll get on the plane January 29th, and we will arrive in Manila January 31st. Now, if you wonder how can you leave on the 29th and get there on the 31st on a 16-hour flight, you can, trust me. You get on a plane 16 hours later, you've totally lost a day, and it's the next morning in the Philippines, and you're so messed up, it's unreal. But we'll get there January the 31st. We'll be there January the 31st. And then on February the 1st, I'll be picked up in the morning by Emilio Alvarez and his son. And then we will get on a ferry, and then we will go to the island of Marinduque. Now, you see that Sabuayan Sea? That little island right in the middle of the sea, that's Marinduque. I've never been to Marinduque. But I've been in contact with Emilio Alvarez for a couple of years now. And he's one that sometimes individuals say, "Scott, take this money and send it to somebody you know in the Philippines." Emilio is usually the one I end up sending it to. He has been making a trip on a ferry from Manila to Marinduque and spending about 3 days a week there for several years now. There are three congregations on that island, and he preaches at all of them on the Lord's Day, and he's been doing that for quite a long time. So I'll be with him February the 1st, then Sunday night, February the 3rd, we'll try to find our way back to Manila. And if we get back to Manila that Sunday night, Monday morning, February the 4th, we get on a plane and we go down, back down to Mindanao. And on Mindanao, we'll see Olympio and Ernesto, and we'll have a 3-day, possibly 4-day lectureship on the work of the preacher. And then on February the 8th, we'll get back on the plane. This is a Monday through Friday deal down here on Mindanao. February the 8th, we get back on the plane and fly back up to Manila, spend the night in Manila. Well, I won't spend the night in Manila. What'll happen is I'll get off the plane in Manila and walk over to another part of the terminal, get back on the plane the same day, and fly back down from Manila back down to Negros. So that's going to be a big day from Mindanao to Manila back down to Negros. And don't worry, it's not that far. I mean, these are hour flights we're talking about. On Negros, it'll be Friday, to Sunday night, visiting with Pablo, Marion, William, and Gerson. We'll see all of them. And they are the four best guys you ever saw at putting you on a whirlwind and keeping you there until they're done with you. And that's a good way to put it, till they're done with you. And then you leave. And then fly back February the 10th back to Manila, and then on February 11th to Cagayan. Now, Manila, Cagayan's right in the middle of that dot there. And Cagayan, we'll be meeting with Marv Bilguera, who we know very well, for another four-day lectureship. And then February the 15th, back to Manila, with a Pasay congregation where Jim Putterbaugh is. I'll have the opportunity to, found this out today, to preach and teach class for them that day. If you're wondering how Jim is, he is sick enough that he hasn't been to services in over a month. He is not doing well. You know, we hate to hear that, but that is the way it is. Now, the conditions in the Philippines now are pretty interesting. Politically, you probably heard of Duterte, Rodrigo Duterte. He became president of the Philippines in 2016. And the funniest thing in the world, none of the preachers that write to us, the men we support, not one has said a word against him. Which makes me wonder if what you read in the press and what you hear from the people are two completely different things. But Duterte became president. He's from Mindanao, the southernmost island. He was mayor of the city of Davao, which was a Wild West drugs, vice, shoot 'em up town. The kind of town where we all say somebody ought to do something about that. Well, he did. The downside of that is a lot of people turned up missing. I mean, they took care of it. They took care of it. And now he rules in the Philippines. Mindanao is under martial law. Now, somebody, if you ask me, what do you think about going to a place that's under martial law? I'm glad it's under martial law. That makes me feel a whole lot better about the situation. So this is Duterte. I also know I won't be making any negative comments about him while I'm there. But truthfully, a lot of the things you read about him, it's kind of like old news for the Philippines. It's the kind of thing's been going on forever. Now, economically, two typhoons hit this year, Umpong and Rosita, and they hit very hard. They hit very hard up here where Victor and Ray are. They had a lot of damage, a lot of devastation, ruined a lot of crops, and it really did create a lot of hardship among our brethren. The exchange rate tells you something about the situation in the Philippines. Any other trip I ever made, the exchange rate was 40 to 1. 40 pesos got you a dollar. Now it's over 50 pesos to get a dollar. So they've lost over 20% on the value of their money in the last couple of years. And that can't be a good thing if you're Filipino. Now, in the churches, men continue to work. In the last 6 months, they've reported 8 baptisms, which is kind of down based on what they've done in the past. But we understand things ebb and flow. There's always some kind of an issue that arises. At the moment, the issue is known as ME, mutual edification. There are brethren there that do not believe. To us, it's the old no located preacher deal. An evangelist is somebody that starts a congregation and moves on, and after the preacher moves on, the evangelist moves on, the saints do all their own edifying. Can't have a preacher there anymore. And it all seems funny to me that the preachers who are advocating this, you got to move on and work out in the boondocks, first thing they do is move into a congregation and try to steal it before they move on. Two lectureships, that's going to come up a little bit. In Ephesians 4 and verse 14, As a result, we are no longer to be children tossed here and there by waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by the trickery of men, by craftiness in deceitful scheming. There will always be winds of doctrine. There will always be the trickery of men. So the fact that it raises its head once in a while should not cause anybody to want to just throw in the towel and give up. Now, you might wonder, why is it that after all these years, and brethren, it's been years, the first trip anybody made to the Philippines was in 2008. That's 11 years ago. And brethren had been supporting preachers in the Philippines for years and years and years before that. Why is it that we maintain such an interest? I mean, it is a known fact that many congregations have pulled their support away from preachers in the Philippines, believing that there has been way too much corruption because of too much American money. And there is a lot to be said for that idea. If the average Filipino makes between $150 and $200 a month, and Americans come in and start paying preachers $500 or $600 a month without bothering to check anything, that creates problems. I've personally seen a situation where someone was offered $500 a month to preach, provided they would support a certain doctrinal position. This is the kind of thing that does sometimes happen over there. And brethren, we have cut people off. There have been times when we found out where people we were supporting were in fact corrupt. They were taking support and not doing what they said that they were doing. That kind of thing happened in the first century, and it continues to happen today. This is what we intend to do. We intend to remember that not everyone is corrupt. We intend to maintain contact with the men that we support so that we can know them as well as possible, so that we can know what is going on as well as possible. And as funny as it sounds, our intention is not to over-support them. We have tended to forget about them a little bit. When you first start getting involved in something like this, everybody is all excited. You know, somebody makes a trip, comes back with pictures, and wow, isn't that neat? Isn't that exciting? And then time goes on, and then we want the next exciting thing. What's happening in Mexico? What's happening in Africa? What's happening in Argentina? We know that people sometimes lose interest, particularly in the Philippines, and there's a really simple reason we know. They would send letters, nobody would read them. It's like we want to know that we're doing something good. We want credit that accrues to our spiritual account. But I'm not personally interested in the details. I just want to know that I've done something that I can think of as being good. Here is what the work is not in the Philippines. After 5 days, the high priest Ananias came down with some elders with an attorney named Tertullus, and they brought charges to the governor against Paul. We might think of the work in the Philippines as being high drama, lawyers, politicians. It's not. If you really want to know what the work is, in Galatians chapter 6 and verse 9, let us not lose heart in doing good, for in due time we will reap if we do not grow weary. It is wearying work. It is a plodder's work. Just keep moving forward, just like us. In many ways, they are just like us. And the men whom we support, they would like to be more to us than just someone we send money to once in a while. Occasionally, they would like for us to read their letters and think of their situation and maybe even make a trip there. In fact, I wish that everybody could make the trip, especially those who are young. Every aging generation, that means me, every aging generation tends to look at current conditions and shake their head and say, this generation, I don't know, what are they coming to? What's wrong with them? We read a passage like Proverbs 30, verses 11 through 14. There is a generation. There's a generation that doesn't respect its elders. There's a generation that thinks it's good, but it's really filthy. There's a generation that's arrogant, thinks it knows everything. There's a generation that's just plain old mean, cares about nobody. Every aging generation looks at the generation underneath them and thinks that's what they're seeing. And I tell you what, I'm seeing it. My wife works in the Clovis school system. She sees kids that she knows. There's nobody at home who cares about them. And they're in a school where no discipline is enforced. And there are students in grade school that just totally ignore their teachers, and their teachers do nothing about them. In many cases, there is no religion. They are not being raised to even believe in God. There are no parents. Parents don't care. There is no discipline in the school. Kids who think about themselves, think about doing what they want to do, and yet somehow they feel shortchanged and cheated. They all have a phone. They all have a video. They all have computers. They all have tennis shoes. They all have their own room. And they all feel bored. We just should have all this stuff. And we should have even more. You look and you can tell something is missing, and they don't know what. It's been forgotten, but it's all happened before. Turn, if you would, to Isaiah chapter 5. Seven 700 years before Christ, here's the problem in Israel. Problem starts in verses 3 and 4. And now, O inhabitants of Jerusalem and men of Judah, judge between me and my vineyard. What more was there to do for my vineyard that I have not done in it? Why, when I expected it to produce good grapes, did it produce worthless ones? God talks about his vineyard. He talks about his people. And the question is, what more could I have done? We start with that idea. A group of people that God had done for them everything you could ask for. A group of people that should have been satisfied and should have been happy with what they had and happy in serving God. And yet, what did they do? In verse 8, woe to those who add house to house and join field to field until there is no more room, so that you have to live alone in the midst of the land. A group of people that all they cared about was big property and a big estate. That's what I want. I want to push all you peasants away from me, and I'm going to live in my big mansion in the middle of my big estate. In verses 11 and 12, woe to those who rise early in the morning that they may pursue strong drink, who stay up late in the evening that wine may inflame them. Their banquets are accompanied by lyre and harp, by tambourine and flute and by wine, but they do not pay attention to the deeds of the Lord, nor do they consider the work of his hands. I just want to party and forget God. And not only do I want to forget God, I'm going to consciously try to put God out of my mind. Because if I have to think about God, that ruins my party. In verse 13, therefore my people go into exile for their lack of knowledge, and their honorable men are famished, and their multitude is parched with thirst. They don't know anything. And they don't even realize it. Ignorant and don't know it. Verse 18. Woe to those who drag iniquity with the cords of falsehood and sin as if with cart ropes. Brethren, they are so into sin, they sin so much that if sin were a commodity like corn or wheat or rocks or bricks, they sin so much they need a cart to pull it around with them. In the 20th verse, woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who substitute darkness for light and light for darkness, who substitute bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Can't tell good from evil. Imagine a situation among the people of God where they'd reached the point where they had degenerated so severely that, well, you know what? This idea of killing my child as a sacrifice to an idol, what's the big deal? I don't see any harm in that. Sometimes we wonder about our society today. You know, we talk about sexuality issues and the way people are being pressured. Well, what's the big deal? I don't see the big deal in this. There was a time when the Israelites did not see a big deal in killing their own babies. Because of society looks at something as being harmless, as what's the big deal? God looks at it and says, you want to look at it that way? I'll tell you where it's going to take you. Verse 21, woe to those who are wise in their own eyes and clever in their own sight, and they think they are so smart. Sometimes you look at youth and you say, this generation, how'd they get that way? They learned it from their elders who let it happen. First thing that needs to happen is people need to listen to God. And then there's another thing that might be a little bit helpful, shock people a little bit. A visit to a third world country, country like the Philippines. I'm going to be seeing young people who are sick, who are malnourished, who don't have anything. I have seen kids less than 10 sleeping on the sidewalk, laying down on a piece of cardboard, and that was their bed because nobody wanted them. It's the kind of place where here's your island. Here's your town. You know what your life might look like? You may never get off of this island, and you may not get more than that far from your town. That's your life. And if you're living there, your goal is to get out of there and to come here. Young people, if you think your life is boring, you come with me and I'll show you what boring looks like. Right now, used this illustration before, I'll use it again. Right now, there is someone in torment in the next world who would gladly trade places with you simply because you are alive and therefore you still have hope. right now somebody would trade places with you, sight unseen, just because you're alive and you have hope. And young people, right now, there is a kid your age in the Philippines who would trade places with you, sight unseen, simply because you are here and you've got a shot. And some of them know that they don't. That is, you have a shot if you want to use it. You see that picture? That's not a bad looking place. Bamboo house. Looks fairly clean. Doesn't look like a bad place at all. But that's a house for about five people. And you know where I was standing when I took the picture? With my back to the wall on this end of the house. That's the whole house. Sometimes adults get to thinking they've got it hard. I'm stuck in this job. My life is bad. Why doesn't God make my life better? Doesn't He like me? And now, O inhabitants of Jerusalem and men of Judah, judge between me and my vineyard. What more was there to do for my vineyard that I have not done in it? Right now, adults in the Philippines, there's somebody saying, "You got a job? I'll trade you sight unseen. And I don't even want to know what the job is. I'll trade you. Let's switch." Brethren, we need the lesson. What more was there to do for my vineyard that I have not done in it? Sometimes we think it is so hard. And truth is, what more can God do? The trip to the Philippines, it's not all for them. We have gotten a lot from them. In the area of object lessons, courage in adversity, lessons concerning perseverance, lessons concerning looking ahead toward eternal life, looking beyond this life when you have almost nothing in this world. For them, we will do what we can. And we will remember that what we do for them, we do for the Lord. We seek to spread the gospel. There are men over there preaching the gospel, and we are supporting them. We want to see it spread there. We want to see it spread here. We think about our society. There it is. We are asking people to look at things differently. Look at the life that they are leading and know that that is the pattern of humanity about as far back as you can go. And we're asking people not to think that way. In Acts 2 and verse 36, at the conclusion of Peter's sermon, he said, "God has made Jesus Lord and Christ. He is the one to whom we listen." If we want eternal life, we listen to Jesus. "Go ye into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. He who believeth and is baptized shall be saved. He who believeth not shall be condemned." If you've not obeyed the gospel, Jesus offers something beyond this life. As good as we have it here, as good as our life is, it does not compare to what God offers in eternity through His Son. If you're here tonight and you'd like that hope of eternal life, would you come forward while we stand and sing?